live. It's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. Cause every minute, every hour, you'll be shaken by the strange and mighty power.
Utah Jazz basketball is going to make its return to KOAL tonight. We do have a later tip-off at 8 o'clock. Jazz Lakers, as we continue the in-season tournament. We're going to get you out to David Locke and Ron Boone. They'll bring you the play-by-play call. Outside of that, I mean, we take a look at the NBA schedule tonight. It is a little bleak. We only have five games on tap, and here in the state of Utah, obviously Lakers Jazz is going to be the top one. We'll talk about everything else going down this week as we head into Thanksgiving, kind of a slower week for the NBA, but we are approaching the 20-game mark. Joining us as he does each week, we have James Hollis. You know him on Twitter as @SnottyDrippin, our Drive Time Sports NBA insider. James, it's always a pleasure to get you on the show. I appreciate the time again today.
Thanks for having me on, man. It's funny because I haven't written or produced content in so long that I'm sure a lot of your listeners are like, why the heck is some random Twitter guy doing radio? But hopefully, I represent okay, and they like having me on.
You represent just fine. And in fact, you and I were talking last week. You talked to some Utah Jazz people from time to time as well. Everybody knows Tony Jones here in the state of Utah. Everybody loves Tony Jones. So, no, I mean, you're still very well connected to the league, even though you may not be writing or talking on a weekly basis. You come here on a weekly basis. That's all that matters.
That's all that matters, man, and a lot of good basketball going on right now.
Yeah, there is, and a big one as we take a look at tonight. I think any time the Lakers and the Jazz get together here in the state of Utah, it is a rivalry as far as the Jazz view it. This one's on national TV tonight. We also get Cleveland and Philadelphia, so it's not a bad slate of basketball. But if we look at the in-season tournament and the way things have gone so far, I'm still not a huge fan of it, but whatever. That is what it is. I'm not going to go down that path again. It's a big game for the Utah Jazz, who right now we're sitting at 2-1 within the Group A, while the Lakers are 3-0.
Yeah, again, I'm a tournament agnostic. I know all these games just count as regular season games. I do like the fact that I feel like that players are kind of like, they're a little extra juice for these games. I know, you know, it's $500,000, and people say, oh, it's not a lot of money. But NBA players, even the superstars, know that for a lot of their teammates, $500,000 is a lot of money. And they are competitive as heck, and, you know, these are the guys that, you know, you put on a team playing with a deck of cards, and they'll play for thousands. So just the fact that there's money on the line and there's, you know, there's some kind of competition spirit, competitive spirit behind it, you can see these games, like, these guys are actually trying to go at each other.
Yeah, I think I can get behind, James, the idea of these guys actually playing some competitive basketball. And we'll take the Jazz, for instance. And you kind of dove into this last week when we were talking about what the reward should be for winning the in-season tournament. Utah below 500 right now, but they are 2-1 within this in-season tournament. And I think for really a fan base that is playing with house money, doesn't expect a lot, it makes tonight's game maybe even a little bit more intriguing from that perspective, I guess.
It makes it a lot more intriguing. And, you know, on paper, quote-unquote, you think, oh, the Lakers are, some said they're, you know, a finals favorite, and then the Jazz, we know, are in a rebuilding phase. But I think this is much closer than that, man, because the Lakers are a lot like Golden State. If you're young and athletic and you have a little bit of length and you have some versatility, you can give the Lakers problems. They want to be an older, slow-down team. They want to have a lot of shooting. So, you know what? I'm really feeling good about the Jazz this game.
If we talk about the Lakers for a moment, because as you alluded to, a lot of people love what they did in the offseason. I was indifferent to it. The only thing I liked what the Lakers did in the offseason was they kept roster continuity, which is something you don't see a ton of when LeBron James is on your roster. There's still some problems within this team. It's still not quite to the 20-game mark. There's no Gabe Vincent. There's no Jared Vanderbilt. So I know that there are some key pieces missing. But I was thinking about this. As the trade rumors continue to swirl, and I know the Zach LaVine rumors, the Lakers are going to get mentioned in pretty much any big deal in the league. I want to stay away from Zach LaVine 100%, but I started thinking about guys that could help this roster. He's not a shooter per se, but I tell you, the guy I really like, I think the Lakers should make a move for, is Pascal Siakam. That's the guy that I would target if I was the Lakers front office.
Oh, you know what? He's a very good player. I'm going to say he's better than Zach LaVine. The reason I don't know if he's a better fit is that there's so much duplicity there. Yeah, a lot of, like, think about it. He's a better Rui. He's a long wing who can score. He'll hit open shots, but he's a streak shooter. It's more about attacking the basket. So he's in that same vein as a Rui, as like a very poor man's LeBron. And, like, it's not bad. he would help the team, but like he doesn't really address the biggest need, which I think is outside shooting and like creative ball handling. So I get it, Zach. You'd have to maybe hold your nose a little bit on Zach, but I think Zach would be a little fit with what's already there.
You don't want to know what my problem is with Zach LaVine, and this goes to any team that brings him on. The fact that he got 4 years on a $215 million deal left. James, I'm kind of indifferent on this. I don't know which direction to go, so you tell me if I'm just completely being stupid here. When you have a defensive liability, it's hard to hide, especially when you have someone that's on the hook for $215 million. Yet with that being said, we've learned over the last couple of years, be it Jordan Poole, Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook, John Wall, no deal is unmovable in the NBA. I guess that would be my only concern with LaVine. A deal like that could set you back, being that this guy is such a massive defensive liability. The Lakers have the pieces around it to make that work.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And D'Angelo Russell is trying. He's trying more on defense this year, but we know he's not a defensive mastermind.
He's not.
So I'm going to say this. I think Zach LaVine is a much better offensive player than D'Angelo. D'Angelo can get hot and be at a very high level for a minute, but we know he wants to dink and dunk, take a mid-range shot. He'll heat up, hit threes. I think Zach is a much more explosive scorer, and I think putting him in an ecosystem with LeBron James and Anthony Davis, I think that might unlock him a little bit more. Think a little bit like Wiggins when he went to Golden State, right? And he went from having to carry this heavy load to now he's a secondary, tertiary kind of guy, and he was really kind of unlocked. Now, Wiggins obviously is a better defender, better, bigger, longer guy, but I'm just meaning the mold of you take a guy who has a lot of offensive load, you put him on a team where that load is lessened and he can just do his thing, which is score buckets, and kind of try to fit in, and I think you have a better player.
Okay, so I can piggyback off of the Lakers for this next question. We are not quite to that 20-game mark, but let's be real. When we talk about the Lakers, the window to win is right now because you have an aging LeBron and you have Anthony Davis. You need to win right now. Are there any? Who are some of the other teams, James, in your mind that have a window to win right now that obviously need a roster update to compete for an NBA title?
Win right now, and they need an update. The Clippers just tried to make their update. I don't know if they have another move to make, but that was one of them. Dallas isn't win now, right? But so that one's off the. I don't think any team. Am I missing somebody? Help me out here.
I look at Oklahoma City. They're not in win now mode, although they are very, very competitive. I like your Dallas idea. Yes, maybe. You know what? Maybe Phoenix. They've kind of backed themselves into the corner with the three deals, but I do worry about Bradley Beal now with a back injury. You know, we can get into that a little bit later. Maybe Golden State, because you have Steph, you have an aging Clay. I don't know. Maybe Cleveland. I'm going to go with Cleveland. I think Cleveland is a team that definitely needs to upgrade the roster right now.
I'm also going with Philly.
Philly's fair, too. Yeah.
I think Cleveland's a good one because, yes, they want to make sure they retained Donovan Mitchell and show him that they're worth, so that's definitely a big one. Philly, I think also, because, this is how many years in a row that Embiid has not got the second round. And sure, Tyrese is fitting in now. Everything's clicking now. We know it's about having versatility and depth even to the playoffs. So, I like your choice, though. Cleveland's a good one.
When you look at players that could be on the move, who's the most intriguing to you? Is it Zach LaVine?
I think Pascal. I like Pascal and even OG. If Toronto decides to go full blow-up mode, and I think, honestly, instead of Pascal, I think OG might be a better fit for the Lakers. Very low usage. He can hit standstill threes. Very versatile defender. Like, that's the kind of guy, and I get it, he doesn't have maybe the explosive pop of a Pascal, but I think he's a steadier player, and I think he raises the floor, if not raises the ceiling. You know what I mean? So, those two guys, Pascal and OG, could definitely be intriguing pieces for a team like I don't know how Phoenix could do it, but a team like Philly, a team like even the Lakers, right? So Cleveland, if Cleveland gets a hold of a guy like OG or Pascal, look out.
Okay, now people are probably saying, look, we're 15 games into the season. Why are we talking about this? And that leads me to the very next conversation. The Chicago Bulls, who are well under 500, I think have to be the most intriguing team from a front office standpoint, James. There's no doubt this squad's going to blow it up. And let's be real, while the Bulls are not a good team, they have pieces that could make other teams very, very good. I kind of put Chicago in the same category as the Utah Jazz a year ago. And I remember talking with someone within the Jazz organization, and they said, look, the Jazz have the ability to make certain teams very, very good. And they did with some of the pieces that they had. Same thing with the Bulls. When you talk LaVine, when you talk DeRozan, when you talk Caruso, there are some good pieces here.
Absolutely. Even a guy like Patrick Williams, even though they want to hold on to him and build around him. The Sun knew he's a nice backup piece. They do absolutely. A guy like Caruso, that the Lakers didn't want to pay. Now there's talk of them maybe trying to bring him back, which is hysterical to me. So, yeah, absolutely. Even a piece like Torrey Craig. I know he's not a splashy name. It's not a sexy name. But as a seventh man off the bench, 10 minutes a game, we saw he did good things a couple years ago. But, yeah, I even think this is more dire straits, right? You got three max guys, basically, for Chicago, and they're just not a good team. They don't fit. So, yeah, definitely, that's a good one, man. The teams could kind of vulture pick this team apart and get some good pieces.
No question. Again, James Hollis, our guest right now as we talk NBA basketball. James, I don't want to talk about what's happening right now in Minnesota, because last year it was not good for the majority of the season. You look at the Timberwolves, and it just didn't look like the roster pieces fit. I mean, there was movement in the front office, a guy that I definitely was a big believer in. Now we're looking at it once again, size, size, size. Here they are at 10-3. All of a sudden, this team looks legitimate once again. This team looks legitimate. I guess this was the idea last season, right? This was the vision that Minnesota's front office had in place last year. It just took a year for it to come to fruition. Size has been a problem. You can't teach it, and they proved that through 13 games, sitting at 10-3.
Yeah, man. You guys give them all the props in the world. Everyone talked about how Anthony Edwards seemed like he took a leap. You know, the leap because of the FIBA games. It's 100% legit, because that kid has arrived. Look, you know, he's knocking on the top 10 type, top 7 type player right now, and he has so much room to grow. Crying City Towns, after a really slow start, I think he's averaging 26 a game over like the last 6 or 7, and he's not, he's a dead-eye shooter. He's actually being very effective. Rudy Gobert looks a little more spry. He doesn't look like the dead weight. Still not worth, $45 million or whatever it is, but point is that they're winning. Their size and their length combined makes life heck for the opposing offenses. And Anthony Edwards is like, you got a superstar to elevate everybody, man. He's making plays, he's scoring, he's that confidence and exuberance. I have to admit, man, I was one of those people who thought this was never going to work, and that they would have to do something with Carl Anthony Towns. They're going to flame out. They're clicking.
Is it sustainable? Because again, if we look at the lineup, Jaden McDaniels right now being out, that would be huge, right? If they were to lose him. But even if you take a look at the depth coming, I actually don't hate the depth in Minnesota either. So is it really riding on the health of a guy like Mike Conley, a guy like Jaden McDaniels, or do you think it goes deeper than that?
No, I think I do think they might need one more piece, one more playable wing or like a perimeter guy. Somebody who's maybe a higher level, maybe not a superstar, but like a Drew Holiday type level, or maybe a step below. Because when you're and Naz Reid, 100% awesome, awesome player, but he's your impact player off the bench. They probably could use one more ball handler and maybe a little more shooting. But I mean, the proof is in the pudding. They beat Boston. They've had some really good wins. As long as one thing is, I know he's very young and he has all the energy in the world. You don't want to overtax Anthony Edwards, and right now he has to do almost everything. So it would be nice to see them get one more guy to kind of compliment him.
James, I want to touch on one more topic before I let you go. We talked about Phoenix briefly. I made mention of Bradley Beal once again, another injury. I can't recall the last time we had a player deal with a back injury early on in the season, something that just continues to reoccur. They call it the lower back strain. I guess that's the term they're giving this. But apparently there's some nerve irritation, which is causing some discomfort in the legs. Like, this doesn't sound like something that you can overcome during the course of an NBA basketball season. Maybe I'm being pessimistic, but I don't think this is good news for Phoenix at all. We talked about the idea that you can't really improve the roster because of the moves that they have made and where the cap is. I am legitimately concerned about the Phoenix Suns at this stage. Am I going overboard on this?
We're less than 15 games in, and Bradley Beal has already slated to miss significant time because of a bad back. I'm with you. I'm racking my brain to think of a time a guy had a back injury early in the season and then came back and was back to his normal self, and we didn't worry again. Backs are nothing to play with, right? Everything's connected through the back. Your back goes wonky. He's having issues with his legs. Legs are all about the shooting, all about the legs. And it sucks because you're right. They went all in on this, and those three are supposed to be the tent poles. Everything is supposed to revolve around that. You take one of those guys away, you still got Booker and Durant playing amazing. They're going to struggle, right? They're going to struggle even against mediocre teams because they're just so top heavy. So, Phoenix rolled the dice, and it's a long season. Maybe there's some kind of maybe they're taking it really slow with him because, like we just said, the back normally could be a deal breaker for a season. Maybe they're trying to ease him in. They're trying some other therapies and stuff, but it's not looking good for Phoenix.
No, not at all. Again, he's James Holas. He's kind enough to join us each week. James, I know we jumped all over the place, but I really enjoyed the conversation this week. Of course, you got to give us the Twitter handle and where people can find more of your NBA insight.
Homage to the great Scottie Pippen, who I know maybe Jazz fans don't like. I heard that the Wi-Fi at the stadium, at the arena there is, Michael pushed off. Or MJ pushed off. This is awesome. Omar's a great Scottie Pippen at Snotty Drippin, where I'm just talking basketball and life and non sequiturs, all that stuff.
Always fun to get you on. Can't wait to do it again next week. James, have a happy Thanksgiving.
You are the man. Happy holidays, everybody. Enjoy Turkey Day.
We're going to pause one more time. We come back. We'll put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports. We are live from the Sutherland Studios, and it's here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.